Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, October 31st. Support for Medical Monday comes from HealthQuest Systems Incorporated, the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. HealthQuest.org for locations. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday is our absolute favorite, Dr. Jennifer Michaels of the Breen Center for Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And she's here to answer your questions about addiction. Nothing could be more important today. Mental health and related topics. So give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Jennifer Michaels of the Breen Center for Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services. Hi, everybody. It's Alan, and we are delighted that you are with us today because we have our favorite guest of all times, Dr. Jennifer Michaels, with us. She is here to discuss mental health and substance abuse issues, and we know that we are in the midst of an epidemic on that. She's assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Massachusetts, board certified both general and addiction psychiatry, and has been in practice for over 15 years, although I have to say she doesn't look it. Dr. Michaels, welcome back to Medical Monday.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be back, Alan. Thank
you. You are the best. And, you know, I think people should know that you have now become sort of the go-to person. And we're talking about not only the Berkshires, but much of Massachusetts and New York State. People are quoting Jennifer Michaels all the time. And I have to say we thank you, and we thank your wonderful husband, Basil, for his work helping to support the family.
Thank you very much. I'm grateful to him too. Thank you.
He's great. Okay. So anyway, we are here. We're answering your questions. If you know somebody who's addicted, if you are addicted, we'd love to talk to you. And if you have an insight into or a question about what's going on, that really would be great. Is there anything particularly new, Jennifer, that we're looking at in terms of the evolution of this big problem we're all in?
Well, you said that we're in an epidemic, and that is completely correct. And we're in the next phase of the epidemic because we've finally cut back on the pills. Doctors are prescribing fewer pills. And an unintended consequence is this wave of heroin addiction. And the heroin is laced with fentanyl often.
And what is that?
So fentanyl is a synthetic opioid. It's like a cousin, a synthetic cousin to heroin or morphine. And it's 100 times more potent than most other opioids.
Wow.
And it's ubiquitous. It's very easy for drug dealers to get their hands on it and add it to heroin, and people inadvertently overdose.
So when you have a lot of clients who come to see you, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but and they tell you, you know, how they got into it and all the rest of it, what is the level of crime that we are of the people who are selling it? Who's do you get any insights into who is selling this stuff?
Well, I think the worst part of it is when someone looks at it as a business model. You know, they're not using, they're not desperate. They just want to make a lot of money.
Sure.
And, you know, they're benefiting and other people are dying because of it. And some of it's gang related. And some people are selling because they have a serious addiction and they are needing to support their addiction.
So on the ballot, as you know, is this question on marijuana. And I know that I have often quoted you because you, at least early in the game, seemed to think that that marijuana was a gateway drug, that people who, not everybody who smoked marijuana obviously got into heavier drugs, but many who did were looking for greater thrills. Is that still your opinion?
Well, Alan, this is how I look at it. Not everyone who smokes marijuana
sure.
will be using heroin. Certainly,
right.
The vast majority of people who smoke marijuana will not. However, every single person that I treat who uses heroin or opioid pills started their addiction with alcohol and marijuana. And so if you think about it as a parent, you know, what do you wish for your child? You know, you're gambling if you start early because we know that increases your risk of getting addicted. And there's that chance that your child will progress to heavier substances.
Now, while people are voting on this very issue in Massachusetts, I already voted, and I know how I voted. One of the big objections to legalization is the fact that we don't have a good enough way of assessing when a police officer picks somebody up for erratic driving. There's no test. There's no blood test yet, and that seems to me to be an awful problem in terms of loss of life and death and limb for people who were subjected to being crashed into by some of these folks.
Yes, Alan, you're 100% correct. And these are the statistics. If you're drinking and driving, you quadruple the risk of a motor vehicle accident. If you smoke marijuana and you drive, you double the risk of a motor vehicle accident. And we don't yet have a test, a blood test, a saliva test, to figure out who's intoxicated and who is not. So that's a problem. And the other problem is a lot of people drink, smoke, and drive, and then it's a multiplier for risk.
Interesting. And then on the other side, if we don't legalize, then the very people, miscreants you were just talking about, have a business because we've made it illegal. That's the downside, I think.
Well, even where it's legal, there's still drug dealing, marijuana dealing.
I heard that. Yeah. Why is that? Do you know?
Well, you don't have to pay taxes. And
I see.
You don't have to comply with the laws as far as purity and testing. It's still cheaper to do it illegally than legally. So it will not wipe out drug dealing of marijuana.
So how do you, Jennifer Michaels, when you get one of the very many people who come to see you, how do you turn them around if they're on heroin?
Well, my job is wonderful because by the time people are coming to see me, they want to change.
Uh-huh.
So I get to see this miraculous transformation. And I have this team of people who are extremely compassionate and skilled, who are a big part of the equation. And we perform therapy. We have medication that helps with cravings and withdrawal. We also work very closely with Berkshire Medical Center and
Dave Phelps, proprietor.
Yes. And BMC now has a rehab, which is a game changer for us. It used mm-hmm. to be that people who wanted to detox would go to detox and stay 3 or 4 days in the hospital. Now BMC has a 30-day rehab, and that's really what people need so that they can kind of heal their brain, begin the process, and then when they leave, they come to the Breen Center, and we continue the process of recovery with them.
Interesting. That's very interesting. Do you have success stories?
Oh, yes, and I'll give you an example. So
great.
This Saturday, I performed an 8-hour training for our community in Berkshire County, taught them about how to treat people with opioid use disorders. And I had one of my patients come in and speak with them. It was fascinating because everyone thought she was my daughter. You know, she looked so much like me. I had never realized that. But what that tells you is that addiction can happen to any family. It's colorblind, it's zip code blind, resume blind. She sat up and told the story of how she used heroin in her teens, and it progressed to dating a major drug dealer. He was killed in a gun shootout, and then she found out she was pregnant. And that was the motivator to get sober. And so now she's in recovery. She works in a yoga studio. She wants to help other people in recovery. And she's inspirational.
Yeah, that's great. Look, yeah. We got a lot of calls already. Let's take a few of them, if it's all right with you. We'll go to line one. I got to bring this thing here closer to me because that's the way it works over here. All right. Line one. Jim, you got a question.
What's new in the treatment of bipolar disorder, and is that the same as manic depression?
Jim, thank you for the question, and you're correct. Bipolar disorder is the same as manic depression. And the treatment modalities we use are a combination of medication and psychotherapy. And I find it very interesting that the medications we use tend to be anti-seizure medications. And it's only more recently, the past few decades, that we discovered that they're also very effective for bipolar disorder.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Okay. And now we'll go to Alan in Williamstown. Alan in Williamstown, you're on. Good name. Go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Chartok, and thank you, Dr. Michaels, for taking my call. The reason why I'm calling, you know, you guys were just discussing, you know, marijuana and as far as how, you know, you believe it is a gateway drug. What about some of the studies where they have shown medical marijuana actually helps people get off of opioid abuse?
Okay,
so that's a good question. There's a lot of confusion about that. So there was one study that looked at states that had medical marijuana and the rates of overdose death from opioids. And what they found was that the rate had decreased in those states. And so the conclusion was, if you have medical marijuana, people are using less. The problem with that study was it included states like Massachusetts, which didn't even have medical marijuana available. So they maybe had the law, but it wasn't even available. So the conclusion was incorrect. And I can tell you from my experience, when people are using marijuana, they're using marijuana and they're using heroin. It's not like they use marijuana and stop using heroin. They drink, they drug, it's all of the above.
Well, actually, Dr. Michaels, as somebody who had battled with opioid addiction, you know, my options were slim. My options were go to jail, my options were to die, or my options were to be clean. One of the options was, you know, as far as Suboxone, which the way I look at it, pretty much you're trading illegal heroin for legal heroin that's more controlled by the state. And I've known a lot of people who are currently on Suboxone who have been on Suboxone for many, many years.
Alan, I gotta cut you off only because the quality of your voice is so diffuse that we're not being able to hear it. But we thank you for your call, and we hope you'll come back again. Thanks again. Okay, go ahead.
I just want to say that he brought up the issue of Suboxone, which is a medication that some people take for opioid use disorder.
Right.
And in the world of treatment, people who choose methadone or choose Suboxone are often ostracized and stigmatized, much in the way that people in general who have addiction are ostracized and stigmatized. And it's very unfortunate because most people taking those medications are doing well, and they're alive, and they're working and paying taxes. And we need to rethink how we stigmatize people who engage in treatment.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades. ShannonRose.com. Brattleboro Retreat, offering partial hospital and intensive outpatient care at the Birches Treatment Center, full and half-day psychiatric and addiction treatment, and on-campus housing available. BrattleboroRetreat.org/Birches. Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, AshfieldStone.com. Union Gables Mansion Inn, Saratoga Springs, providing hotel amenities in a historic bed and breakfast setting with a heated pool, wraparound porches, and private balconies, UnionGables.com. And from Maria College, Albany, bachelor's and associate's degrees in health sciences, nursing, liberal arts, and management, day, evening, and weekend programs. Open house Sunday, November 6th, 11 to 2 p.m., newmariacollege.edu.
We're back, thanks to Zacharias. He is a wonderful guy, and he brings us the best in music. Jennifer Michaels is here with us right now, and we love her and love the fact that she's with us, and is such an expert on this. Okay, so we'll go to Austin on line three. Austin, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question, but first a statement, which I'll try not to make it into an argument, but I'm another one on the marijuana being a gateway drug factor. I'm 52 years old now. I liked marijuana a lot when I was in high school, and then just plain stopped liking it. By the time I was out of my teens, I was never smoking pot anymore. Just made me anxious, and that has continued through my whole adult life. Drinking is something that I have done socially. I can't actually remember the last time I had a drink, although once the holiday season starts, it'll be easy because I'll go to somebody's house for a holiday dinner, and I'll have a couple of drinks, and that'll be that. I started using heroin a couple of years ago. I got clean recently. I'm sure you'll be happy to hear that. But there's absolutely no connection between my use of these drugs. And I think I want to make the point that one of the really difficult things in science is picking among hypotheses which would all fit the data and deciding which one you're going to go with, okay? So you're looking at this data and saying, okay, a hypothesis that would fit is that marijuana is a gateway drug. Here's another hypothesis for you. The reason marijuana was a gateway drug was that it was illegal. That is the manner in which it was a gateway drug. Somebody crossed a legal line, had absolutely nothing to do with the drug itself. They crossed an artificial legal line and said, nothing so bad happened. Maybe I'll try something else. In my case, actually, heroin is the gateway drug. Now, having been on heroin, I started smoking again. I tried cocaine, crack cocaine. I had powder way back in the 80s, which fortunately just didn't do anything for me at all because my chemistry isn't not aligned up with cocaine, which is another thing that nobody
okay, listen, really listen, Austin. Austin, I'm going to ask you to get to the bottom line here, and let our expert, Dr. Michaels, come back to you. Okay, go ahead. What is your bottom line?
I think I've made it.
I think so too. Yeah,
but I think she's applying the wrong hypothesis to her data and coming up therefore with an erroneous conclusion.
Okay, we'll let her defend herself, although if she doesn't do a good job of it, I'll defend her. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say I'm glad you're in recovery and congratulations. And
Thank you. I knew you'd want to know that.
Yes. And Alan and I were just talking about the term gateway, and I said to him, you know, I really don't like that term because it kind of sparks all of this passion. When I think about substances increasing the likelihood of using other substances, I think about alcohol and marijuana. And you said you used alcohol, you used marijuana. It's not a guarantee that people will. It just increases the likelihood that they will graduate to other substances. And is it worth that risk? And we also know that the earlier we experiment with substances, the more likelier we will graduate to those other substances. So that's how I think about it.
Okay.
Even 30 years later, without touching anything in between.
So I'm not saying every...
Don't you think that those apply in the...
Ointment.
Dynamic.
Yeah. I didn't quite
understand. Don't you think that throws a fly into the
ointment? Oh, into the ointment. Yeah. I think what we're saying is increasing the likelihood, but not 100% sure that it will do that. But it does increase the likelihood. If you start with one substance, that you'll increase the likelihood, it will lead to another one. You fortunately didn't have that happen.
Austin, thank you. Mm. That was nice. Okay, and now we'll go to Ann in Clifton Park. All right, Ann, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. On another note, I'd like to talk about, if we could, food addiction, which is just as devastating to the people who have that, and any listings on where to go. Thank you.
Stay on the air. Stay there.
Yes, Ann, and are you struggling with this?
Oh, God, lifetime.
Me too.
Chocolate is the evil. Being diabetic doesn't help.
Nope.
Okay. So a lot of people don't realize that when you eat in an addictive way, the same part of your brain that is affected by drugs is affected by food. And so it's the compulsion,
right.
It's the kind of the binging, and it can affect every part of your life. You know, the joy, being secretive, filled with shame, depression. And so some people have found benefit with Overeaters Anonymous. Some people have gone to Weight Watchers and have found that effective. I don't know if you struggle with weight issues too, or is it just more the eating part?
No, it's everything. Just on a quick note, Overeaters Anonymous was tough because they would talk about the food that they weren't able to have, and that was set triggers. Weight Watchers is good. It's just that point system makes me really crazy, and it makes me want to just eat more. But anyway, I know there's...
We may have lost her. Okay. I would also recommend for people struggling with this, talk to your doctor, get some advice, a nutritionist. It's very challenging, sometimes more challenging than drugs, because you can stop using drugs, you can stop drinking, you got to eat.
Got to eat.
So
I also think, Doctor, that it has to do with what you eat. I mean, you know, you can make, I find that if I make substitutions in my mind, you go to the refrigerator, this compulsive business of looking in the refrigerator, thinking something new is going to be there. Well, you can either have a yogurt or you can have, you know, a hamburger. I mean, you have to make these, have to sort of make these decisions and condition your mind.
Yes. And we've also found that avoiding white type foods, you know, sugar, rice, pasta, breads, can have a dramatic effect on diabetes. Some people have had their blood sugars normalize when they remove the white, you know, the starch-type foods from their diet, and then increase the rainbow foods, you know, the fruits, the vegetables, and things like that.
Absolutely right. Yeah. I think that's right. Well, thank you for that. Okay, so now I'm looking at the official look here. We're going to number one, and we'll go to Mike in Richmond. Mike, you're on.
Hello, Dr. Michaels and Alan Chartok, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to thank Dr. Michaels, first of all, for all of the hard work she does dealing with drug-addicted patients. Having said that, I want to remind your listener base that physicians created this problem at the outset, so we need to be a little bit skeptical about some of the claims that physicians may be making at this point in treating opiate addiction. When we mention heroin and fentanyl in the same sentence as marijuana, I think that is doing a disservice to your listenership. Nobody has ever died of a marijuana overdose. And when you have traffic fatality risk quadrupled with alcohol and supposedly doubled with marijuana, although the statistics I see online don't support that, I question other statements that Dr. Michaels is making.
Okay, Dr. Michaels, you're up.
Sure. You are 100% right that physicians really initiated this epidemic, and it happened in the 1990s. We overprescribed opioids for pain, and we're now seeing the consequences, and it's terrible. As far as marijuana being mentioned in the same sentence as other substances, it is a drug of abuse, and it can have very negative consequences for some people. And we're seeing it is so potent now, we're seeing that some people are overdosing. That's very unusual, but we're seeing it in the state of Colorado.
Do you mean overdosing, doctor?
Well, people can get psychotic on very high doses of marijuana. That's not common, but because marijuana is 12-15% more potent than it was in the 70s, it's like instead of smoking one joint, people are smoking the equivalent of 12 joints or more.
Wow.
And one young person jumped out of a building because he became psychotic while he was high. No history of psychosis. Children are eating the edibles and overdosing, not dying, but overdosing and going to the emergency room. So that's unusual. But when we think about marijuana, we have to think about that, too. It's not perfectly benign. And it is addictive for some people.
Are those overdose cases being seen with medical marijuana use or marijuana obtained from drug dealers?
All the above.
Aha. All right. Well, it'll be interesting to get some references on which states are providing marijuana that is 12 times as potent as they should be. I would still suggest to you that 10,000 fatalities per year due to alcohol
Well, no, that's the old two wrongs make a right argument.
Well, no, I'm just saying, why focus? You know, why not eliminate the number one cause of death on the road?
Well, that's why we have Mothers Against Drunk Driving and
we still have 10,000 fatalities a year, Alan.
Well, by the way, I think traffic fatalities in the United States are going down, not going up, and I think we've been working on these for a long time. No, I always reject this business of. Because alcohol is bad, it is. There's no question, and it's a terrible curse. That somehow makes marijuana better. It doesn't.
No. All I'm suggesting is that there are far fewer deaths from marijuana than there are from alcohol. That was my only intent.
You're very right about that.
We get it.
Yes. Thanks. We agree.
Great.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Dr. Michaels, and thank you, Alan.
Yeah. Bye bye. Pardon me. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And now we go to Nathaniel on line number two. Nathaniel, you're there.
Hello, Dr. Chartok and Dr. Michaels. Thanks for taking my call. I'm in recovery myself, and I have a pretty broad experience of just about anything that could be abused, but it's been many years now. And I just wanted to see what Dr. Michael's feelings were on alternative treatments. It sounds as though she is an advocate for, treatments that are based in fact, reduced harm, behavioral therapy. And I'm wondering how she feels about some of the things that other countries are doing that seem to be not catching on here, in particular her feelings on Ibogaine treatment, which has shown to be extremely effective in treating heroin addiction in many other countries, Australia and Norway and Sweden and Finland.
Okay, Doctor. Okay,
my response.
No, don't. You got to stay there. That's the rule because we may want to ask you a question.
Oh, great! I would love to.
Go ahead, Jen.
Sure. So Ibogaine is not available in this country.
What is it?
Ibogaine is a chemical or a substance that leads to kind of a dissociation or disconnection. And some people have found that it's helped them to successfully get off of opioids. It's not available in this country. And we have a term, evidence-based treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know for sure. We haven't done evidence-based studies in this country on Ibogaine. There are people who will swear by it, and there are people who will say that it didn't work for them. It is available in some other countries.
Any potential dangers to it, do you think?
I think part of the problem is it's a shorter-acting treatment, and it's not a quick fix or a cure. So if you go to another country and have a week-long treatment, my feeling is this is a bigger disease than a week-long treatment. Mm-hmm. Although some people will say, I went and I'm cured. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for them. I just don't want people to think that it necessarily works that way. I've had people go to another country, get Ibogaine, come back, and resume their substance use.
And how about you, Nathaniel? Have you used it at all?
No, I have no. I have no experience with Ibogaine. I tried all of your both evidence-based treatments and other programs like Alcoholics Anonymous and. I've read a lot of interesting things. I do know right now they have clinical trials at John Hopkins for the first time in many years using psilocybin to treat a variety of things. Included in that study is its efficacy in dealing with alcoholism, drug addiction.
Doctor?
So, anyway.
Okay.
Interesting.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, sure. Doctor, any follow-up? No.
Just that, okay. Yeah, we're looking at other methods, and we don't have all the answers yet.
Okay, and we will go now to G in Gardner. All right, G, you're on. Go ahead.
How are you both today? Happy Halloween.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Doctor, one of the things that ended up being was consistent over almost all the major university and the NTSB study on marijuana and safety and driving. Every single one showed that people who are regular marijuana smokers, actually, as crazy as it sounds, are safer than the norm. that was in the NTSB study, and it was in three different university studies in the last 3 years. So I think, you know, to a point, your numbers, which are right for people who are not marijuana smokers, who took the test and did twice as poorly as the norm, that your numbers are a little disingenuous.
You know, I think this is part of the issue, is that when people want to find a study to support their point of view, there are studies on both sides. And that tells me...
I'm the moderator, and you, we gave you your chance. Now we'll give her her chance. Go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
And I think that this illustrates how there's a lot we don't know.
Yeah.
And we need to do more research before we know that something's safe. And I mentioned before the study about Colorado and how there was one study that showed that there was no increase in marijuana use in teens in Colorado. And that sounds great, that, you know, it's legal and there's no increase. However, that study, if you look at the details, it failed to include the major cities in Colorado. Mm-hmm. When you put those cities in, Colorado has the highest rate in the country of teen marijuana use. So I can quote from two different studies and have dramatically different results. And that's an issue.
Okay, G, very quickly, go ahead.
Surely. Okay. One, you didn't approach my question. Of course, you know, there are issues with different studies. We're talking about the NTSB, and I challenge you to find a university or a major study that did not come up with the exact same point I made. And you can say we can look at teenage smoking, and that's not what we talked about. We talked about safety and driving.
Okay, that's fine.
And,
gee, okay, you made your point,
you
and
right,
you made it. And you made it more than once, which is generally the way I handle things if somebody comes around a second time.
I appreciate it, but she didn't answer the question.
Now that's the third time, and we don't want that. So one of the things I got to tell you is, I have come into contact with students and people over the years who have smoked a lot of marijuana. And when I'm with them, I have to say, there are some of them who are skunked out of their minds. And now, would you want to be that? I mean, this is anecdotal, of course. But what was that, a cow? But would you want them? Would you want them riding down the road at a wheel?
I'm not trying to justify driving and smoking. I'm trying to justify the fact that the doctor is picking her study.
Wait. That's the fourth time. We don't do that now. So you've made your point, and everybody's
all
heard
right.
You. Okay. Listen, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. All right. So now we're going to go to take a break. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back.
Support comes from New York Oncology Hematology, now offering stereotactic radiosurgery in Saratoga County, SRS treatment for inoperable tumors. Available at their Clifton Park office, newyorkoncology.com. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany, Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Delivery expanding to Gilderland, 518-432-0358. Schenectady County Historical Society and Schenectady's Historic Stockade District presenting the Vote Here, Vote Now series featuring exhibition speakers and presidential trivia night with prizes on November 7th, schenectadyhistorical.org. And from United Way of the Greater Capital Region, working to combat local issues like hunger, domestic violence, and kids in crisis. Donations stay local, help local. UnitedToConquer.org.
Well, we're here. We're back with the wonderful Jennifer Michaels. Nobody better. Okay, so, Jen, I know that one of the things that I love about you is how hard you work, and you've been giving talks all around the place. I think there are a couple coming up, aren't there?
Yes, that's true. Tuesday, November 1st, tomorrow, I'll be in North Adams at the MCLA Church Street Center, 545 Pizza, 6 o'clock talk, alcohol, marijuana, and opioids, what parents need to know.
Wow.
And then the next day...
And they get pizza?
Pizza in North Adams. And
wow.
A little learning, too, to go with your pizza.
Wow.
And then 7 o'clock on Wednesday at the Mahawi, I will repeat that same talk. I'm sorry, I don't think there's pizza, though. But,
no.
But also opportunity to learn and talk about our children and what we need to know.
And what time is that? That's right down the hill from me. So what time is that?
Maybe 7 p.m.
That's great. although it is my bedtime. So so that's great. And when parents come, they obviously, these are heartfelt meetings, and they have questions.
Yes. And I'm a parent, and it's confusing because we want to raise our children to be the healthiest, the happiest they can be. And understanding substances is part of figuring that out.
And we'll go to Ryan on line number three. Ryan, you're on. Hey, Ryan. Whoops. Ryan, are you there?
Hi, yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I am actually 2 years sober from heroin abuse. And one of the things that's really kept me sober is Suboxone. And I did hear your opinion on it, Doctor, and I appreciate that very much because there's stigma. Hold on 1 minute. And I'm actually at my doctor's right now. And I wanted to ask, why is it that eventually Suboxone users need to come off of it? Because that's my biggest fear, is getting off of it 10 years from now, 5 years from now, and going right back.
Great question. And so this is my response. The measure of success in your recovery is not whether you're on Suboxone or not. It's the quality of your life. And so if you choose to stay on Suboxone the rest of your life, that's fine. If you want to taper off, do it slowly and do it with your doctor. But no one has to get off of Suboxone. The measure of success is how you're living your life, and the treatment model is not to taper off unless you want to. So have a happy life. That would be my advice.
Yes, no, exactly. I thought that it was kind of a rule that we have to get off of it eventually, because my doctor seems to be pushing me towards that end.
Well,
that's good to know. And I also just wanted to say, it sounds like we've got a lot of passionate marijuana users out there.
Yep.
And I just wanted to personally remind everyone that, you know, you're here to help, and we really appreciate all of the knowledge and information you've gathered for people.
Great.
Oh,
Nice of you. Thank you very
much.
Thank you. Yeah, bye.
I know.
All right. Okay. And we're going to go. Yes, we are going to go to, let's see here. Oh, Patrick. All right, Patrick, your turn. Go ahead.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Go.
Yeah, good to be on the program. I've never called into a radio show before, so this might be a total train wreck. What a great topic of conversation. I was really fascinated by this, and I just wanted to call in and offer maybe an alternative perspective. I've been in recovery from drugs, alcohol, marijuana, opioids, food for many years, and the thing that kind of we don't really hear about too much, or I don't really hear about too much in the mainstream media and the news, is that this is a cultural and a spiritual issue. And it's not really the drug that is the problem. It is the reason why we addicts use. And like the thing that has cured me is a sense of community, a sense of spirituality. And that's just something that I don't really hear too much about. So I just kind of wanted to offer that perspective.
Doctor?
I love what you're saying. I think stopping is not enough. And people in recovery need to find meaning and a place where they belong. In their community, and also find meaningful work. You should know, in the Berkshires next weekend, there is an interdenominational prayer for people suffering with this disease and loved ones of those. And that's a recognition that there is a spiritual component. So I think you're
also
right.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
It's also kind of a cultural thing that we as a culture maybe need to acknowledge that this is a problem, like this is a spiritual problem, and not necessarily a, like, well, if we create a law against this plant, then it will solve the problem.
I think that it's part of our fabric. For example, in if we look at our population, we're 5% of the world's population. We consume 25% of the world's illegal drugs. And so I don't think it's because it's legal or illegal. I think it's that it's part of what we do and what we think is okay to do, and maybe part of what's missing in our lives.
Okay, we're going to let you go. A lot of people on the line. Thank you very much for that. Very good idea, Patrick. And now we will go to George. All right, George, you're on.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Good to talk to you.
Good. Go ahead, George. We got a lot of people behind you. All right.
Yep. I know you do. I've listened to you many times. Well, anyway, I am a former heroin addict. Recovery date, March, I believe it was 3 years ago. So, yeah, 2013.
Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I have a girlfriend, actually, right now who just checked herself into a rehab halfway house detox, kind of like all three, which is an oddity to me. There seems to be too much freedom there. She has a full-blown addiction to marijuana. I didn't think it was possible to get that addicted, but she couldn't go a day without it. There were times when she's also bipolar, I should say. There were times when she would literally break down crying because of a reason she didn't even know, just, I guess, lack of serotonin. And so she would smoke, she would feel better, and then it would get worse. And then the next day, the same thing would happen, it would get worse. And it would get progressively worse to the point that she was so depressed that she actually did something that I can't say over the radio, but she did something very bad, and it ended up in hurting herself. So she went to this detox. And,
okay, George, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but we got about 10 people behind you, so I want to very quickly.
Okay, let me wrap it up then.
Go ahead. Bottom line.
Yeah, the bottom line is.
You can get addicted to marijuana.
Yeah, can you get addicted to marijuana? And also, one piggyback on that, she also stopped immediately, I should say, once she got into this this halfway house, and then reverted to alcohol. It was something that I had no idea she had any addiction towards. But the question is, can you get addicted to marijuana to the point where it makes your life unlivable? And if so, can you get clean and get, you know, your serotonin receptors back up to where they should be and become happy again, basically?
Yes. So excellent questions. Yes, you can get addicted to marijuana. About 9% of people who use regularly will end up having compulsive use and get addicted and change their brains, essentially, in a way that, you know, it manifests this disease. And then when they stop, they will have withdrawal. A withdrawal syndrome that's not life-threatening, but they're irritable, they have sleep issues, they can't concentrate, and then they crave marijuana. And that's what your girlfriend probably has been suffering. And she also suffered what we call addiction transfer, meaning I'm all done with the marijuana. I never had problems with the alcohol, so I'm going to drink now. And we see this all too often, that people transfer the compulsive behavior to a new substance or a new behavior.
Oh, I felt that very much so with benzodiazepines. They've kind of filled a void for a while, and then, you know, you have to get off them, of course, because the withdrawals can be deadly. But anyway, that's all I want to say. I know you guys are busy.
No, it's a very important contribution. I think it really was about the marijuana addiction. I thought it was very important, and thank you for doing that. All right, we'll go to... to Don on line number 7. You're on, Don.
Hey, how you doing, Ron? How you doing, Doc?
Hi.
Hey, listen, I just wanted to say you have another passionate marijuana advocate here, I guess. But I was just hearing what the doctor was saying and stuff. And I understand about gateway drugs and stuff like that, but I just feel like the only reason, or the biggest reason anyways, why marijuana could be a gateway drug is because it's illegal and it's sold in the same street corner as the other illegal products. You know, point being, if you took it off the streets and put it in this in a shop, you know, I just don't feel like it's too much of a gateway drug. I feel like marijuana or alcohol is a way worse drug than marijuana is. You know,
we've already talked about that. You know, you're right.
I kind of tuned in late to the show.
You know, alcohol is terrible. We know that. You're right, but it's not a question.
I just feel like it's way worse. And you know, they talk about the damage done by marijuana, and they say if you want to look at the damage that's being done by the criminal justice system being imposed on people over marijuana. You know,
yeah.
I mean, if you look at the savings you take this by, if you made marijuana legal, the criminal justice system,
many people have decriminalized marijuana, so that it's not the same thing. You go to prison for a long time. In most places,
well,
you get
decriminalized, but it can still cause damage to people when they want to catch them with it. You know.
Yeah. Okay, Jennifer. I'm sorry.
Well, I think decriminalizing it makes a lot of sense, and so in Berkshire County, you get a ticket,
sure.
Like a parking, the equivalent of a parking ticket. I think in the past 3 years, one person has gotten a ticket for marijuana. So I think that was a game changer. It had to happen. And it also allows us to treat people who have this problem rather than punishing them, which we should be doing for all people.
Thank you very much for...
Thank you, Don. Appreciate it. All right. We'll go to Timothy. Number eight. Timothy, you're on.
Hello. Actually, the last question ended up being pretty pertinent to what I was going to say. But, Doctor, my question revolves around how do you feel that legislation can be changed with your professional opinion about drug abuse to better facilitate people getting better and having rehabilitation over a long term than just getting punishment?
Well, I view addiction as a disease. And so my hope is that everyone who has it has an opportunity to get treated and has easy access. I think if someone is violent, you know, perhaps they have to go to jail. But if it's more that they are in possession, victimless crime, let's help them. Let's treat them. And I think because of the way our legal system is set up, that doesn't happen as often as we would like.
Now, following up on Timothy's excellent question, Dr. Michaels, comes the question is, money always helps things like your program. I mean, obviously, we could have a lot more treatment if we had more money to do it.
Yes, and treatment is a bargain. You know, for every dollar we spend treating people, we save society $7, $8, $10, depending on the study you look at. But putting people in jail is very expensive, and treating people is such a bargain. And yet we have difficulty providing the funds.
Yeah.
We struggle with this every day where
I work. So, Tim, thanks thanks for calling, because it's late in the program.
Can I say one last thing?
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead.
Just the reason that I asked the question, it did touch me very personally, because a few years ago when I was in college, I was arrested. I did have to go to jail for a very small personal amount of marijuana. It was in Pennsylvania, a different state, but I want to say that I absolutely agree with what you said, and I do appreciate it. And I think the more doctors and medical professionals that have that opinion will have a better effect overall and help treatment, you know, as a whole. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Tim. Okay. We'll go to Lynn in Malta. Okay. Lynn in Malta, you're on. Go ahead, Lynn.
Thank you for taking my call. I had a question. I have a grandson who was the light of my life when he was growing up, and now he's 18, and he's just out of control. We know he's on drugs. We don't know what he's taking, but we want to do something to help, and he's not terribly interested. So could you give us some suggestions on what we can do to help a family member to get help?
Yes. And Lynn, I'm so glad you're calling, because we think about addiction, we think about the person addicted, we think less about the family, but they suffer with the disease. There's a wonderful organization called Learn to Cope, Learn to Cope. And there are meetings throughout the states. I suggest you Google them and go to a meeting, because you will find support and information. Also, if you have a loved one who's using opioids, you want to get Narcan in your house. And that's the rescue medication. Because if anyone's overdosing, you want to have that on hand. Also, Al-Anon and Naranon are two groups that will help give you support. But the worst you could do is suffer alone, because it's the worst feeling. I talk to families all the time.
And thank you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, now we are, as always, out of time. I want to thank Channing and Mike and Peter and Seth and Jason, all of whom are on the line right now holding on. Jennifer Michaels, you're amazing. And when you come, every one of these phones is busy, because apparently this is a big problem.
Oh, yes. And everyone has a loved one or a neighbor or a friend who's struggling with this.
Yes. Now, repeat for me, if you will, where those talks you're going to be giving are.
Oh, certainly. So tomorrow we'll be in North Adams at the MCLA Church Street Center. 5:45 pizza. 6 o'clock is the talk. And then the next day, Wednesday, we'll be at the Mahewi at 7 p.m. And the talk is alcohol, marijuana, and opioids, what parents need to know.
Is it possible, Jen, to be addicted to pizza?
And
remember, it's white flour for the most part.
I think it could be a problem for some people.
For some of us,
yes.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Jennifer Michaels. You are terrific. And again, my apologies to all those people who are left on the line. Support for Medical Monday comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital. Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, now offering inpatient dialysis, NLH.org. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones and for keeping me honest about who comes next. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Again, thanks for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/voxpop. Stay tuned now for a news update.